nothing less.
Expect nothing less. All right. Welcome to Ed Leaders, a podcast covering all the interesting ideas about leadership, strategy, culture, and the business of K-12 education. I'm your host, Luke Kelly, and joining me each week in the chair is my co-host and colleague, Matthew Irving. Today, Matt, little stumble there. We are talking about our last month, a little recap of Edutech and Ahiza. Matt, you ready to roll?
I think I am. Let's crack on and riff and see where we go.
All right, let's get to it. So we headed over to Edutech kind of about a month ago now, Matt. What's your recollections of Edutech? I have one vivid recollection. Can I share that first?
Yeah, I reckon you should start.
Well, I recollect getting there on a Wednesday night and we were strolling off down the road to dinner and I detected in your voice slight croak.
Well, it was more than a croak. I'd actually lost my voice, only to discover about 10 days later that I'd actually had a very bad sinus infection, but I couldn't speak. I didn't have the dulcet tones that I often have when sort of at these conferences and doing our podcast, of course. So, I was struggling a bit, to be honest.
You were struggling a little on that first day. So you woke up the next morning and Matt had no voice, essentially. It was like this. and of course, he had to come up with the excuse 10 days later about his sinus infection. But we all know that. So he was just a little bit overwhelmed with the situation.
Yeah.
So that meant on the first day that I then spent most of the day emceeing and it left you to your own devices.
Well, yes. And in hindsight, perhaps you would have been better sort of positioning yourself in the expo and talking to people rather than me. And perhaps I would have been better doing sort of the MC role. So anyway, we've learned something for next time.
Can you talk to us about maybe one or two takeaways you had from the event in talking to people over the few days?
Well, we all know that Edutech is the biggest tech conference in this country, and it's the who's who in this sort of IT technology land. And also, you do have a lot of school leaders, so you have lots of deputies, and you know there are some principals walking around. So it still is one of those sort of community raising type activities where you have lots of people together, and you can't estimate that notion of building community at such big conferences. Probably the one a takeaway for us is that so many people walk by the stand that know us, that and it feel like they know us personally when we perhaps didn't know them personally because they're regular listeners. And it's always wonderful and affirming to meet with listeners and feel that connection straight away around the podcast. So certainly a really important piece for us. Probably the second one is where does, podcasting sit in the landscape of professional learning? And certainly met with a few people that said, this is free, isn't it? And I said, yes. And understood that a podcast around leadership can be scaled in their systems and in their schools, and that they can leverage, the diversity, but also the quality of what we sort of deliver. So I think that was a really interesting thing that we perhaps haven't explored a lot, but Edutech gave us that understanding. So that might be two sort of takeaways I have. What was on your list?
Definitely that notion of, I kind of probably took it from the business lens necessarily when it comes to us and Edutech. And a lot of people kind of, as you were saying, like they were like, what are you selling? Actually, we're not selling anything here. But we didn't really make that clear. Our messaging doesn't make that clear, and our messaging certainly on the stand didn't really necessarily make it clear what we were offering. And I thought from a business point of view, that's probably something to reflect on and something that's a little bit interesting for us. What are we trying to sell, even though we're not really selling anything? And I guess that's, as I was thinking about it on the way home, what we're really selling is the best free professional learning for aspiring and senior leaders in K-12 schools. But we don't really message that with our marketing kind of material. And so for me, that was something that I will think about over the coming months, think about how we might message that going forward when we're at those type of events. So it's a little bit clearer for people kind of walking past or wanting past why they might want to stop at the stand. So totally agree on that front that, something to get going forward. The other thing, you know, to kind of go back to your first point was just the sheer scale of edutech. You know, walking around that venue, I mean, we were there for 2 days, and obviously both you and I got to walk around a little bit, but it felt like it was a good, I don't know, like a good 10-minute walk down to the other end, if not longer. And that was at pace, like not stopping anywhere. And I don't necessarily know that I got to go past every stand and see what was going on. So there's that kind of interesting balance of the sheer scale of having to be there and everyone being in the room versus the overwhelmingness of it, you know, as an attendee to kind of get around and see the, you know, the entities that you want to engage with, or that you want to wander past and go, oh, that looks interesting, because it's just so big.
I think that's a really interesting point. You know, I wonder if there are three motivations, you know, to going to edutech. One is you've got some relationships already and you're doing a bit of a check-in with those existing vendor sort of relationships. Number two, that you're actually already working on an IT project and you know, you're sort of comparing, you know. So let's say you're looking at LMS, you're there to see the three or four big players when it comes to LMS. And then the other piece is people are looking, what's the latest? What's the new stuff? But I can't help think that that's perhaps a very small proportion. Maybe that's 10%, because it's just actually overwhelming. And that when you are looking at your clients, that's probably, you know, 60% of where you're going to. And the other sort of 20%, you know, 30% is if you're actually looking at a project. So I think understanding those motivations of people going, there may be a fourth one, which is just to connect with other educators, but I'm not sure that's the driving motivator. Be interested in your thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I agree up front. I think, I don't know, I think for me, it was important to it signified that we're continuing to progress in the journey for Ed Leaders, for being in the room and having a stand there. And for those partners that we've been working over the last few years and continue, like it was a good signal that we're growing and kind of getting bigger. I do want to go back to your point around where does podcasting fit in? There was us and there was one other podcast there that was being run by a school, in kind of the name of it, but kind of student voice, hearing from us about how they're feeling about different topics. And you can't help but wonder how that's going to grow and the ecosystem of podcasting as professional learning, where it's in anyone's own time when they feel like it, will continue to grow over the next few years. I think that's the most interesting and exciting thing about podcasting as the medium grows and as people realize they can do it on their run, or they can do it in the car, or they can do it, you know, catching a bus, or they can do it cleaning the house, that all of those things are time where they can be learning while they're doing another task, and they don't have to sit there on a PD day, you know, run by the school with a school telling them what to learn, or to have to travel, you know, a couple of hours and stay in a hotel to learn. They can learn anytime they want. And I think that's really something that's interesting about the medium and something that one or two people definitely commented to me on coming past. So any other final comments on edutech, Matt?
Probably nothing really from me. Just to say that it's, you know, if you want to know what's happening in the latest tech, you've got to be there. And it was good to be part of it and to reconnect, but also to make new connections.
Yeah, good summary there. All right, on to our latest foray, which was attending the AHESA 2023 conference for principals. What now, what next? Kind of interesting kind of topic just for you and I, you know, more broadly than just the conference. But I guess maybe to just paint a little bit of a picture for people who don't know about this conference, Matt, what's this conference about?
Well, this conference is really the sort of biannual conference for principals and heads in independent schools across the country. We know there are about 1,500 different independent schools, and a good third of them are deeply connected into this conference, and a really opportunity for principals to get together over 3 days to share their war stories, if you like, but also to seek, you know, that level of support, affirmation, and encouragement in the work that they do. And also getting a sense of what's happening out there, knowing that schools are a reflection of society, you know, economic situation, political situation as well. So a really interesting conference. And in many ways, in reflecting, because we are not part of that particular group, is to zoom out and just go, it's actually rather an exclusive group, an exclusive type organization, because it caters for one very specific demographic in the workforce. So really, really interesting and a great opportunity for heads to get together, as I said, and really engage in their tribe, which is a unique one in this country.
Yeah, I guess just to add to that, what were we doing there? Well, we were a part of a partnership with Ahiza to present a live podcast, which I think went down really well, and we'll get to that in a minute. But that's what we were doing there. They obviously have a lot of vendors in the conference floor and the showroom outside the main ballroom, which we were a part of as well. And I had great delight, Matt, in sharing with pretty much everyone that came past that even though we were kind of this hybrid of person there, where neither of us are principals yet, and we don't necessarily sell product like other vendors were there yet. And so we were kind of in this little hybrid zone, but I did have great delight in telling most people that came past the stand that next time this conference is on, Matt will be an attendee here and be part of that group. So any thoughts on that?
Well, I do thank you, Luke, for your promotion of me personally, and attempting to give me celebrity status before I've actually become a celebrity. But I do appreciate that. And it was interesting, with that introduction came another layer of discussion, another layer of engagement, and quite enriching conversations. It allowed me to explore some of the questions that I have about what might happen next year for me, particularly in a regional context. So thank you for the introductions, Luke, because it certainly lit a fire around some fantastic conversations for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I reflected back on, as we were coming home, just going how much of a little head start it must have felt like for you to be kind of in the room, not one of them yet, but enough, being around enough and being in and out enough, because we were able to go into a couple of the sessions, that it would have really kind of been a little eye-opener. And just that ability to already connect with, a range of schools that are like yours, regional, similar context, and to feel like you've got a few people that you can call that are, in the same boat, must feel great.
Absolutely. You feel that sense, a quiet confidence that you've got people in your corner, and to be able to connect with at least two dozen schools that are very similar was fantastic. And their willingness to be on the end of the phone. And I've walked away from Ahiza, and I would say that I have 45 now new connections across the whole gamut of schools, and they are all ones where I would pick up the phone and ask the question. And so that gives you a level of quiet confidence, and knowing there are some principals that are new to the game in the space that didn't necessarily have the kind of transition opportunity that I've had. And equally, the podcast has given me connections and an advantage in that space as well. So a wonderful opportunity for me, and certainly it's not lost. I think what's been interesting for the two of us is when we first started out, we did feel that sense of being imposters. Where do we sit? Because we're not sponsoring, absolutely. And when we're not vendors, where do we sit? But I do believe over the 3 days, and particularly the third day, when we'd had some affirmation, we'd finished our live podcast, there was a real sense that we were adding value. Principals sought us out and said that was the best session they attended, and we felt like we were part of something. We were entering into that tribe and not feeling that sense of great imposters and what are we doing here, and feeling like people are looking at us sideways. It was certainly a sense of community, and that we were connecting with something bigger than ourselves, and quite special.
Yeah, so I guess that leads me to why we were there. And as I mentioned earlier, we were there for a live podcast. So for this particular podcast, we were up on the main stage, 350 people in the audience, all principals. And we had the great privilege of interviewing two titans of education, Rebecca Cody and Philip Heath. And for me, it was a real highlight of my journey so far to share that stage with them. I know that that we did a great amount of pre-work, probably the most pre-work that we've ever done for an interview, to ensure that we were going to get it right, and that it was going to land in the way that kind of you and I wanted it to. Multiple conversations with Nicola from Ahiza, multiple conversations with Philip and Rebecca, in ensuring that we were going to set the right tone and allow them to really shine on stage and have their moment and for us to get out of their way. I'm wondering whether you had any thoughts on being up there and, you know, the reaction that we got both in the moment, in the room. And you kind of commented on earlier, but that feeling afterwards of coming off the stage and feeling, I don't know, for me, like we'd delivered something pretty special and meaningful and really insightful for the people that were in the
room. Well, it's interesting to reflect on the conversation and the experience in itself. Fascinating for us to have done so much work and to have a really good structure in place to navigate what was a tricky topic, which was what's keeping you up at night. And to know that we were going to delve into some vulnerable areas personally, but also look at the system as a whole and provide a bit of a call to action. But it became apparent very quickly that you and I needed to get out of the way. Don't ask all the questions, just let the conversation occur. People weren't there to listen to us. They were there to listen to two absolute giants of independent schools with 20 plus years of experience. So we found ourselves, I believe, just going, okay, this is a very big conversation, get out of the way and let it happen. And there was a real sense that you could hear a pin drop because people want to hear from leaders. And it felt like it was one of the rare opportunities on the plenary stage to hear leadership being spoken, two leaders with the same job title, if you like. So I think that was quite unique. Certainly the affirmations we had were around that notion of hearing from leaders the first time, but just how articulate Philip and Rebecca are, just how wise they are, just how vulnerable they are, how humble they are, were certainly highlights. And certainly that sense of they represent us. They might not represent everyone because they come from quite large schools, but there is a sense of they are talking our truth. And in speaking that truth, they were encouraging, affirming that headship is hard. It really is. And you need a great deal of resilience to grind through, but a reminder, the things that keep us going. And they are students. And we say that flippantly, oh, it's all about the students. No, your heart needs to be students. And Philip spoke about that idea that the day you are not excited and you are not fulfilled by talking with a student and engaging in that relationship and opportunity, it's probably time to hang up your boots. And I think that sense of real calling to the vocation, the day that disappears and that slight trembling and nervousness in the work that you do, as soon as those signs don't exist, perhaps it's time to hang up the boots, as I said. So some very interesting opportunities, but particularly that sense of vulnerability, as I've already mentioned, was absolutely real. And Rebecca spoke a lot about just that sheer emotional toll and the physical toll that some of the work that she does takes on her and for principals alike, but we don't often talk about it. And so she took the opportunity really to press a few buttons and say, no, we need to put our hands up and acknowledge what's happening to us, but equally understand what inner work that we need to do to sustain our work and also, I guess, thrive. So I think there were some really interesting insights, and certainly those things were mirrored back to me from other principals after the session. I'm interested, Luke, what kind of insights were you getting when people were holding the mirror up and reflecting back what they'd heard?
A reiteration of the things you've just said, but certainly the rawness of the insights, and they were thankful that we were able to, you know, elicit that kind of those raw responses. And as you said earlier, then to get out of the way and not to make it about you or I or what we wanted to say, but just to shift and guide the conversation so that it flowed and that it felt like a conversation. And I think the other thing that people said was it was really refreshing to see leadership in action in terms of the way they were vulnerable and what they spoke about, that it was really showing leadership by doing that. And I think, again, kind of coming back to the medium of podcasting, but kind of probably the skills that you and I have built up over the last, you know, 70 plus episodes, is that there's an interesting way when it comes to a conversation that you can kind of just go into more detail and be real about something. Because if Ahiza had asked Rebecca to do a presentation, I don't think that you're probably going to get that. Most people, when they're asked to do a presentation or they submit to do a presentation, you know, at an event, at a conference, it's about something that they've done, you know, like it's about a program or, you know, an element of the school or a structure or, you know, something that's meaningful within their context, but much more challenging to kind of get to the heart of the challenges and the joys without, you know, sounding like you're tooting your own horn. And I don't think that in a podcast format, in the way it happened, was that there would be no one in the room that felt like that.
I think it's interesting to think about podcasting and the way that we do our work in conferences like this. It's about opening up a conversation. And when you open up a conversation, you speak very directly to the heart and you get to story. And it's really the story that brings that richness, but also that vulnerability. And so it is a unique position we find ourselves in, that sort of panel podcast space, because we get to the heart of things very, very quickly. And the veil, if you like, the mask drops very quickly because you're eliciting those responses from the head and from the heart. And I think that's one of the unique things about what we do. And I think you're absolutely right. When people are doing presentations, it's about the badge of honor. This is what I've achieved. This might be something you want to take away. We're removing the badge. We're removing the mask and we're getting to the heart of things. So I think that's unique and I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I probably think that the other one kind of key takeaway I would have from the conversation is the call to action, which was, you know, what's the good of us, but also the aspect of collegiality and that we're all in this together. And the more we can act as a united group in independent schools, the more we can show what's the good of us from the challenges that are potentially ahead with shifting kind of, you know, society and shifting kind of commentary from community and the challenges that we all know are ahead. So I think that's a really interesting kind of call to action in terms of collegiality, which a conference like AHISA kind of brings.
Couldn't agree more.
On that note, I thought we might just go a little bit broader, Matt, and beyond kind of the experience of just our contribution to the event. But obviously, you and I kind of popped into three or four other keynotes. We did a couple of Vox Pops. What were, you know, one or two key takeaways for you, more so about the content that we heard?
Well, I think sort of setting the foundations for the conference, we heard from Michael McQueen, and he talked a little bit about that notion of waves versus tides. You know, waves crash into each other. They are quick. They happen, but they fade very quickly. And we often think about change in that regard, and then we're surprised things don't actually land. We also talked about tides being silent. You know, they happen without people knowing, but they are about sustained change. So I thought that was a nice metaphor to describe, you know, potentially a volatile world where we are seeing the rise of AI and emerging technologies. And when we see, you know, some differences in our workforce, particularly around generational shifts and transitions. And, you know, what does the makeup of your workforce look like now? You know, we've got baby boomers heading out the door, but you've got your Generation X right through to sort of millennials, but you even have younger students in your schools. So how do you bridge the gaps, particularly around the way they see the world? So we talked a little bit about that notion of their truth, and everyone seems to have their truth, therefore it is, but it's actually truth with a little t rather than a capital T. And how do you navigate that? And, you know, there's a sense that young teachers and graduates come in negotiating their contracts and you go, what is going on here? Earn your stripes, buddy. And so being able to zoom out, see our biases, but see our behaviors and navigate those, but knowing is really important. I also found the conversation with Dr. Adam Fraser very interesting, particularly around the idea that happiness, the happiness movement, is crippling transformation and us making progress towards our goals. And that actually sitting with discomfort a little longer is a much better way of delivering long-term transformation and outcomes. And we're so quick to move to let's what makes us happy and what makes us all feel good rather than actually doing the proper inner work. So I really found that really quite fascinating.
And I think I'll just jump in there on that one. I couldn't agree more. I found that presentation super fascinating about, you know, just doing things that are hard, you know, that's doing the hard things and doing the hard yakka. And the hard journey creates a level of contentment, you know, at the end of that journey. I say I say contentment because I think happiness is a fleeting moment in time. You know, I think about it in the context of, you know, training for a marathon. And, you know, we've kind of talked about this a little bit before, but training for a marathon is about the journey, you know, for the 12 to 15 weeks before that. You know, doing all of that training is hard, you know, like getting up 3-4 times a week, getting up to 20-30 kilometers in one run. It's hard. You get to the starting line, you do your marathon, you cross the finish line, and you feel happy. That happiness is, you know, might stick around for half an hour, it might stick around for a couple of hours before you start feeling quite sore. But you know, like when you think back on it, the week later, the 4 weeks later, the few months later, there's a level of contentment about the fact that you went through a really difficult journey and a hard journey. Now, undergoing that transformation and undergoing that journey isn't easy. And the easy thing that can make people happy is to kind of go, oh, that's too hard. You know, it's easier and I can get more happiness by sitting on the couch or more happiness by laying in bed, you know, for an extra half an hour. So I think there's just a really interesting, you know, that's a really interesting narrative about society and about most organizations around the fact that the journey together is the important part. It's hard, but if you get the journey right and the change happens along the way, it actually improves the contentment of the community and the culture. So I think that's really just it was a really kind of important reminder. And I think even beyond schools to any organization, yeah, it's easy not to address that issue, or it's easy to continue doing X, Y, Z the same way we've already done it. But it doesn't mean that in the long run that there's a level of contentment about what you're achieving or doing or the journey that you're going on.
And there was certainly a nice segue. I know we'll just riff on this just a little bit longer, but Dr. Judith Locke talking about pathological altruism. What she's really talking about is, you know, those rise of, you know, of almost therapeutic education in the positive psychology space and that seek of happiness. And then our parents just want our kids to be happy all the time. And actually growing up is hard. And at different stages of growing up as a child is hard. And there needs to be a level of hardness, if you like, to build resilience, to build, you know, those inner skills and character formation for you to actually thrive in the world. And so she didn't miss around those things and things like overdiagnosis and the like, and going, hang on, just stop everyone. This is mad. And where's it going? So a really interesting call to action for school leaders around what is your responsibility for our children in this world that's driving this sort of happiness culture? What is truly your responsibility? But also a really interesting call to action, the way you've described it, is what's the role of the head in their schools around culture and around the workforce and about challenging your staff to actually sit with discomfort and sit with challenge and contemplate, you know, that dwelling of contemplation before you can rise above it to move forward, to demonstrate growth and that kind of contentment that you sort of describe. And really what you're describing for me is sustained change to be better. So I think there's some really interesting synergies there between students, between workforce for heads to consider.
I couldn't agree more. And I had that in my notes, but that is it a responsibility of either a teacher or a head of year or a head of a school, a principal, for every child in that school to be happy all the time? And the answer is no. Like, it's not our responsibility for them to be happy all the time. It's our responsibility for them to guide them on challenges and to, you know, occasionally do things that are difficult and to get them outside of their comfort zone, because it's going through those experiences that you come out and become a better person, or you have growth, or you change and transform. And I think that level of, I think she showed a really interesting graphic, which I tried to copy down at the time, which I haven't got my notes with me, but she had a bell curve, and in the bell curve, she kind of had in the middle, it was kind of like a face with kind of like a straight line. And then it had as you went down this side, you got to super happy, cheesy smile. And as you went down the other side, you got to super unhappy crying. And she was kind of commenting that in a 10-day stretch, you can have any one of those, you know, that's how your 10 days might be. You might be super ecstatic for 10% of the time and super sad for 10% of the time. And in the middle, you're just going okay. And that's okay. So I think that's a really important notion for us to kind of consider.
Absolutely. Great challenge.
All right. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you, Matt, was whom did you meet that had the biggest impact on you while you were there?
Oh, wow. That is a really, really tough question. Whoa. So many people. It's very, very hard to narrow that down. So thank you for that challenge. I really appreciate it.
Do you want me to go first?
I think you might need to go first while I just contemplate on that one.
All right. Well, the people that I felt like I had had the biggest impact on me were the guys from Image 7.
Yeah.
So I hadn't met them before, but met Brad, Andrew, and Bell from Image 7. Had, you know, a really interesting conversation. I think it might have been on the Monday as I was kind of wandering around. They had a stand there as well. Now, for those who out there don't know Image 7, they are also podcasters. They talk to school marketing and communication. Really interesting chat. And then got to sit down with the gang at the dinner on the Monday night. And again, had a really, you know, really good conversation with Belle about her background, what she's done with Image 7, the kind of work they do with schools, you know, in placing staff in schools, in marketing teams. So really fascinating conversations with them and really super just insightful and nice to speak to people who kind of understand the game I'm playing. And probably even more so for me after the 3 days of being at AHESA, for me, I really realized that I'm playing a different game. Like to pretty much most other people that were there, the game I'm playing is very different. And I think those guys probably more than any other kind of understand that game in what I'm trying to do and achieve. So
I'm going to break the rule. And I met with 12 regional heads. And what was interesting for me is contextually, that's what I'm about to walk into. And I hadn't had that connection. And there were sort of two pieces for me. Number one, just to hear the sheer challenge around enrollments, around the DMI absolutely smashing some of these schools, salary increases in a small regional area, and the impact that that has on schools, the amount of money that needs to be spent in CapEx to maintain buildings, but also to look at new buildings to differentiate yourself and that values proposition. So very much external factors in many ways, but also some internal factors making those jobs really challenging. The second part for me was to hear some of the good news stories where schools have almost doubled in size. And we're talking in North Queensland, Northern New South Wales. We're talking about Victoria. About how they've been able to pull different levers internally in their schools to bring about change, to bring about confidence in the community, and to drive those schools forward, in particularly, as I said, in those enrollment spaces. So they were just amazing to hear from. And again, it's that head start that you sort of described earlier in the show, this idea that I was so well advanced in many ways because I'm now a lot more acutely aware of those challenges. But more importantly, know what's at my disposal in terms of what levers you can pull to bring about change.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely just think that I imagine not having had those conversations for two more years.
You're knocking around an empty house, thinking about, well, what do I do here? How do I do it? What's wrong? And to have that happen straight away and actually turn around and there are people behind you rather than turn around and go, oh, where is everyone? I think was absolutely a blessing for me and I believe sets me up really quite well. Not to say it's not going to be hard. It's definitely going to be hard, but I've got resources to pull on, but I've also got ideas in which to contemplate and to play around with straight away rather than spending the first 2 years working it out and then turning up to an AHESA conference going, help. I've got a head start, which is great.
And then the other person, I'm going to break the rules as well because I'm going to go for two people. The other person was, you know, we've mentioned her already, but Rebecca Cody.
Yeah.
And just that sheer rawness and her ability to be vulnerable on a stage with that many people in the room and for that vulnerability to be kind of embraced by the people in the room. Yeah, for me, that was just, you know, such an amazing moment to kind of be a part of and certainly had impact on me in terms of me considering, you know, at times just being a little bit more vulnerable with myself and sharing that little bit more than maybe I might have otherwise. I think that was super interesting for me. I guess on that note, on the Tuesday night, I got home. We went out for dinner with a colleague, and I got home that night. It was a long day, and I was a little bit emotional myself. Like, I was just a little bit like just proud that you know that we'd got to where we'd gotten, you know, like where we'd come from, you know, just two guys from Perth. And there we were on a stage with, you know, some of Australia's greats. And, you know, this is not, you know, self-promotion. It was just a quiet moment and just an emotional moment of feeling proud of that journey to get there, and turning kind of a vision, you know, that we kind of set kind of maybe a year ago kind of into reality, and the amount of kind of work that went into that, and kind of going back to that point, the journey is important, and, you know, the little celebration and being content with being part of something that you've set out to achieve was, you know, just a nice moment.
I think it highlights purpose fulfilled. And I think that moment and that shift in disposition is one of, you know, feeling proud. But it's because of that, our purpose and what's been discussed, and what the work that you have done to sort of create the opportunity is around our purpose being fulfilled in that moment. And how wonderful is that?
And to just round things out, Matt, you know, a highlight, if you will, across the 3 or 4 days that we were away.
I'm probably going to just sort of give very broad brushstrokes here. I think the real highlights for me and insight I take away is the sense of safety that gets created when you bring your tribe together, and that level of vulnerability, and the discussions are not masked. They are ones of saying, this is how I'm feeling. This is what's going on in my school. What do you think? And there's a real sense of safety and collegiality that comes from having such an exclusive group, if you like. So the insight for me was just how important it is to have your tribe, because headship is lonely. You can't have these types of conversations with your staff. You look behind you and no one's there. And AHESA provides a platform, a community, a meaningful community in which you can feel safe and can be vulnerable. And we've spoken that about that quite a bit in our conversation. I think probably the other thing for me is just to understand that being a head is unlike any other CEO job. The number of variables in a given day, the number of decisions you need to make in every day, you need to be the lawyer, the HR, the IR, you know, the health professional. You need to be the, you know, the business specialist, you know, the accountant, a whole range of things. And just the sheer complexity of it requires a significant amount of professional resilience. And certainly that notion of the more you're in the trench, the more you do the hard work, the hope is that you bounce back quicker. But it's along the same themes that we've been talking about. You've got to do the journey. You've got to be in the trench. You've got to do the grind. And if you seek, you know, small wins that give you bursts of happiness, you're not going to be able to sustain that. You're not going to be able to sustain yourself in the job. So you need your tribe. You need to understand that it's going to be a hard grind. And you need to embrace that. And you embrace that around your calling. That's the thing that gives you purpose. And as I described, you know, from Philip Heath's perspective in the earlier part of the show, the day that disappears, the day that you stop that level of grind, the day that your engagement with your staff and students is not one of optimism and hope, it's probably time to hang up your boots. So, you know, mine are probably more broad brush reflections and insights and things that I'll certainly be reflecting on in the months and years ahead.
Nice. For me, certainly highlight was being on stage. Certainly a highlight was at the start, I kind of asked the audience how many people have heard of Ed Leaders before today. And there were a number of people, you know, that acknowledged that.
More than one.
It was definitely more than one, which was a nice moment. What sort of percentage do you reckon, Matt, that were still standing when I asked that question?
Oh, I think a good, you know, at least a third of people were still standing. And I thought, oh, that's not a bad sample, particularly that, you know, a lot of our work is not necessarily aimed at that particular audience. It's that was quite affirming.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I thought it was about a third, somewhere between a third and a half. And
yep.
For the sheer number of people in the room for that, I thought that was a real highlight. Another highlight for me was connecting in face-to-face with people that we've had on the podcast, connecting with Rob French again, and meeting his wife, and you know, a couple of the others as well. And also just connecting with Steve Byrne, who, you know, when I first saw him, I don't actually think I've seen him in the flesh maybe for 25 years.
Oh, wow.
You know, since I left school, and just kind of giving him a hug and kind of recognizing him, you know, as part of the live pod, and just, you know, just kind of reconnecting with someone like that, who I still remember vividly as my year 12 coordinator, was a real highlight for me. And then probably lastly, community within community and you know, like something that I'm looking to kind of build out, you know, is the concept of smaller private networks within leaders, and kind of bringing together, you know, a really, what I think would be a really exciting initiative with some female principals from around the country, and having one of them come up to me at the end and just say, thank you for taking the initiative. Was really a highlight. And kind of going back to that conversation around doing something that was hard. It was hard to, you know, to get those people together, to talk to or invite people that you've never met before. But really kind of a highlight to kind of see that, you know, starting to come to fruition.
Yep. Really, really good. And certainly not the easiest thing to do, but hey, look at the outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, before we wrap up the show, Matt, any questions? Are you left with any questions that you'd kind of like to explore coming out the back of either AHESA or EduTech, you know, either for you personally, you know, for the challenge ahead as you think forward to next year, as you think about the next few weeks in kind of your last few weeks in your current role, you know, for ed leaders more broadly, any questions that you kind of are pondering, you know, as you kind of sit in the place where you are right now?
One of my curiosities is going into my next role, particularly around those levers that I was talking about before and in a regional context, and being clear very quickly on what those levers are. I don't know what they're going to be. And so how do I take what I've learned from AHESA and then be curious to explore what those levers are in my context and how they potentially relate to some of the things that I've heard? So for me, that's a burning question. And over the coming months is something that I'll be exploring as I come to meet leaders, community leaders, school leaders, and students and staff at my next place. One of the curiosities I also have coming out of the conference is, what's that responsibility when it comes to AI? You know, what does it look like for a head who's navigating something that's moving so quickly? And there is that danger to jump on the bandwagon, if you like, and, you know, follow a particular wave in a particular direction and it disappears very quickly. So what's our responsibility and how might we navigate that for the benefit of not only our workforce, but also our students? So that was sort of a really interesting question, which I don't feel like I really answered at the conference. It was more lots of provocations, if you like, and what's coming down the pipeline. My last question that I'm sort of obviously considering is, you know, what does the ed leaders piece look like for me when I'm in a role that potentially creates a level of, you know, conflict of interest when it comes to the position, but also that work that we do? I've made a really strong commitment. It's really important to declare right here is that we're going to continue with the podcast. I'm going to continue to contribute, but it may be a bit more difficult for me to contribute to other things. So I'm just kind of wrestling with that. What does that look like? And, you know, it's probably not appropriate, you know, in a principal context like AHESA, but maybe it's you know, more appropriate in other forums around aspirant leaders and the like. So there's going to be some interesting questions for me to explore, but also to explore with you as we journey together and to set up the next year ahead, but also start projecting out. And how might I continue to support the work that you're doing with leaders and creating smaller communities? So that is a burning question that I'm going to ruminate on further, but it'll be important for me to come to a point of clarity and, you know, a decision around that rather than letting it just hang in the air and us dancing around it, if you like. So something for me to consider. So yeah, they're probably my three big ones in terms of questions coming out of this last conference. What have you got? Yeah.
I mean, I just to riff on that for a second. I mean, I think when it comes to things like AHESA and live events and things like that, I think it's a case of where you might jump up on stage for the hour and rip the ed leader's t-shirt on for the hour. It won't be that you'll be at the stand or hanging out together as an ed leader's united group or united pair. You'll be there to represent your school and to, you know, to mingle and to be a principal. But I don't think it means that you can't jump up on stage, you know, for the hour and put the Superman costume on. But I don't think it would be appropriate for you to leave the Ed Leader shirt on for the rest of the event. Yeah. And I think that people will come to understand that if that's something that we kind of continue to do and continue to play. And, you know, and I think from my point of view, I wouldn't want you to be at the stand. You know, like I would see that as like you retreating to a comfortable place and not putting yourself, you know, in the challenging position of continuing your journey, but understanding that my journey is different. My journey is to be potentially at the stand to talk to, you know, principals in a different way, in a different light, in a different context. But that's not your journey. And that's okay because we can kind of go on different lanes. But I think it's okay to play at those types of events together for a little while, but keep the rest of it separate.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
Questions for me are probably an extension of that, which is just, you know, which lanes am I playing in? And what does it look like and what game am I playing in the long term? How do I continue to kind of evolve, you know, partnerships with organizations like AHESA into doing more of the work that I would like to do with leaders and principals? Kind of, you know, something that I was ruminating yesterday with was the idea of principal services. And when you think about, I don't think I've ever heard that term before, but that notion of what services do principals need that, you know, an organization like Ed Leaders can help provide. You know, obviously there's, you know, people like Ben Tallboys who provide a very legal service, but there's a range of other services as well that I think, you know, that can be explored with Ed Leaders, you know, at the helm of that. So, and that's around, you know, things like the work we do with the private networks and masterminds and other things. So I'm kind of interested to kind of continue exploring that question of how does Ed Leaders evolve? You know, obviously we will continue to do the podcast, but, you know, individually outside of the podcast, how do I continue to evolve, you know, that impact for leaders, future leaders, aspiring leaders, senior leaders and principals and the services that I think are needed and can be provided by kind of someone that understands both the schooling context in depth, but also understands and, you know, what it's like to be a, you know, somewhat understands what it's like to be a leader without necessarily having ever been in the chair.
Some interesting things to consider.
So on that note, Matt, I think we'll wrap it up there.
I think that's a good summary of the last month.
Yeah. So for the audience out there, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the show, share the love, tell a few of your colleagues that you've listened to this cracking podcast called Ed Leaders. Today has been a bit of a talk fest by me and Matt, but, you know, sometimes that's useful to see where we're at on our journey. So I hope you've enjoyed the show. Please sign up to the newsletter. Little bit slack on the newsletter lately, but I intend on getting one out in the next few weeks. So sign up to the newsletter at edleaders.com.au. Any other closing comments, Matt?
No, it's just been a big month and ready for a little rest.
Exactly. And we'll catch you next week.
Go well.